Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. An encounter into the world of human transaction. That sums up The Girlfriend Experience, the acclaimed and controversial drama launched last Sunday on Starz. Co-creator and executive producer Lodge Kerrigan joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Aspiring singer out for the big break in Los Angeles. In El Vato, the first weekly drama hour in Spanish on NBC Universal, our hero is a singer in real life, regional Mexican headliner El Daza. What's more, Telemundo will simulcast the first episode this Sunday. Universal Vice President of Production, Margie Moreno, picks up the situation for us after the top this hour. Also ahead, Hallmark pulls its Sunday night CBS movie. We've got the breaking details, TV One's Made for Movie campaign, and our classic trivia question of the week. All that and a whole lot more, too. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Block Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. You can get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you aboard for the special Thursday later than normal edition of the program All About Television. We're normally with you Mondays and Fridays, an hour and a half earlier at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. But we're delighted to have you here. Great guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and it gets even better when you are involved. So give us a ring if you have a question or comment. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. Your catch us across the country at the top of the hour, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we also have a chat room that you can use. It's SimonApple04 by name, so use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you right now. 60 degrees at the top of the hour, and Lodge Kerrigan from The Girlfriend Experience will join me here in New York after these news notes. Hear My Song, the latest Hallmark Hall of Fame movie presentation, will not, repeat, not debut on CBS Sunday night. Hallmark also has pulled the film from replays on the Hallmark Channel and Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. According to a Hallmark official, the decision to cancel was made after learning of alleged misconduct at a school similar to the school dramatized in Here. Dustin Hoffman and Kathy Baker co-star in the movie, dealing with a boy overcoming his misfortunes via singing. Hallmark stresses the film and cast, and I quote, were not intended to depict any particular individual, organization, or institution. In Here's absence, reruns of NCIS New Orleans and Criminal Minds will play on CBS, and that is all the comment Hallmark will make, at least for now. At the moment, TV One offers an original movie each month. But for 2017, the channel will program 26 made-for-flicks, 14 of them on a weekly basis from Memorial Day to Labor Day. One of them, A Mother's Worst Nightmare, will deal with what led to the death of Trayvon Martin. TV One also will debut at least one original drama series next year. Details on that forthcoming. Spike TV will make a series out of The Mist, Stephen King's 1980 novella. Production will start this summer, and the series will launch next year. And the songs of Bob Dylan may become the jump point for another TV project. Lionsgate and Amazon are exploring Time Out of Mind, a series whose title comes from Dylan's best-selling 1997 album. Filmmaker Josh Wakely from Australia obtained Dylan's permission to develop the series, which if greenlighted, would he write and direct. And that is news notes for now. Believe it or not, it was nearly 2 years ago that Starz turned a lot of heads by saying it was going to make a series adaptation of the controversial Steven Soderbergh-directed film, The Girlfriend Experience. Well, The Girlfriend Experience started the experience this past Sunday on Starz. The reviews, for the most part, were acclaimed. Some were controversial. But no matter where the reviewers stood, they all agreed on one thing. Riley Keough's performance is one of the breakout performances of this television year. Joining me live in New York from an interview exclusive, the co-creator and executive producer of the series, Lodge Kerrigan. Lodge, congratulations. Happy to have you aboard.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here with you.
What kind of a ride has it been for you and your fellow creator and executive producer, Amy Simons, to put this series together?
Well, Steven Soderbergh, I've worked with Steven before. I've known him for about 20 years, and he produced a couple of films of mine. And he called me and Amy independently, although we had worked together. I directed Amy in an episode of The Killing. And he asked us, he wanted one male filmmaker and one female filmmaker to come aboard and do the whole show, have it be what he calls a tour television. We both jumped at the chance, and then we started writing together and, you know, and moved on from there.
What about the premise of the film suggested that a TV series could be made from it?
I think it's really interesting. You know, I think the world of transactional sex is really fascinating, and everyone has an opinion on it. And I think Amy and I were really interested in exploring the ideas or the themes of identity, you know, of intimacy and of control. So I think that everyone, you know, can relate to that.
Mm-hmm. When Entertainment Week gave the series an A-minus rating, which is a very high rating, part of what they said was that this was less an adaptation than a freeform riff. At what point in developing the series did you come up with the idea, let's not make it a, you know, dead-on adaptation, let's really give it its own freestyle, if you will?
Right from the get-go, Steven said, listen, I want you guys to take the title, that's the mandate, and start over and make something original. So right out of the gate, Amy and I were really set free to do our work. And I think that's really a testament to Steven, that he creates an environment in which you can do your best work, but at the same time, it was very collaborative. It was really a discussion between three filmmakers. But at the same time, he really empowers you and trusts you to do your best work, so he sets you free. So although he was involved in reading the scripts, in the casting, reading the scripts and giving notes on the edit, it was very much a conversation between three filmmakers. It was like, you know, take the notes you want, and what you don't want, you don't have to use. So it was really supportive and a wonderful, wonderful environment to work.
Mm-hmm. Lodge, is this the first time both you and Amy have done television, or was this a case where you had done television before with either with Steven or somebody else, and it was Amy
right.
who was the newcomer?
I've directed television before. I've directed Homeland, The Americans, The Killing, Bates Motel, amongst others. Amy's acted in television. She's acted in The Killing and other shows. So I think we have a sense of what it was, you know, what we were getting involved with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the approach was, one thing I should add is I think the approach is very, very different than traditional television. As you know, the standard TV model is pilot-driven and writer-driven, where the showrunner writes the pilot, and then it goes into a long approval process through the studios and networks. And then when it's finally up and running, the showrunner is in another city supervising the writer's room and dealing with the editors while they bring in episodic directors for hire to direct each episode. But in the model that we have, which I think is really a superior model, Amy and I wrote the entire show up front, and we together directed the entire series. So I think it's a real unity of vision that you don't get in the standard model, and I think it's much more efficient. From a filmmaking point of view, we're not forced to get coverage that we don't need. And because all the scripts are written up front, we understand the complete character arc and able to discuss the character in depth and in detail with each of the performers. So there's a real clarity and efficiency that I think is really refreshing. And as a result, I think this model is a much stronger model.
Mm-hmm. Did you divide the workload so that you did some episodes writing, you did other episodes directing, Amy the same thing, or did you have it all, we're going to write and direct every episode together?
We co-wrote everything. We wrote a 15-page outline. It wasn't a standard TV Bible by any means, but it showed the character arcs and the general story arc. And Steven shopped it around. Stars were really interested. They asked us to write two episodes, which we did really quickly. And then they greenlit it. And then Amy and I got back together. We were both working elsewhere. And then we reconvened and we started writing the show. We broke it all out, each episode on a whiteboard, you know, each scene and cards. And then we'd split it up. We'd go over episode by episode. She'd take half. I'd take the other half of an episode. And then we do a second pass where we're in a writer's room together and we go over every line. So really, even though Steven wanted a male perspective and a female perspective, there's no clear demarcation of a male and female point of view in the scripts at all. It's really truly co-written, and you know, in the most detailed sense of the word. And then when we actually split up the episodes on two different tracks, so that we divided them very carefully, so that each in the most fair way possible, so that neither one of us would have enormous influence on the overall aesthetic of the show, that we'd share in it as equally as possible. And we ended up flipping a coin to decide who gets to choose which track. So we didn't do that until all the episodes were written, because we wanted to make sure that it was as fair and blind a process as possible. And then we, you know, we got to know each other really well because we spent so much time together. And when we moved into producing, I think we delivered the final shooting drafts on December 22nd, and we started prep January 11th. So it was a really quick turnaround. And by then we'd gotten to know each other really, really well. And I think Stephen had seen something in common and similar in our tastes and sensibilities. So when we went into casting and location scouting and production design, it was actually a relatively easy process that dovetailed really nicely.
This series is designed as a yearly anthology where we see what goes on through the eyes and the experiences of one particular character from year to year. With all the possible characters that you and Amy could come up with for this first go-round, how did you decide that a college student by the name of Christine Reed would be the character?
We were really interested in somebody who enters the world. And we were also interested in examining, you know, the idea, the notion of work in an advanced capitalist society. So we juxtaposed her working as an escort, or beginning to work as an escort, with the pressures that she works as an intern in a law office, in a very high pressured law office. You know, because I think at the end of the day, whatever job you have, when money enters the equation, power enters the equation. And so I think that's something that everyone has to deal with on some level.
We're speaking with Lodge Kerrigan, and he is the co-creator and executive producer with Amy Simons of The Girlfriend Experience, the acclaimed new drama on Stars. It's on Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. All the episodes in the series are also available on demand through Stars on Demand. Lodge joins us this half hour from New York here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum also here in the Big Apple. Happy you're with us for the program All About the Tube. And if you have a question or a comment for Lodge, don't be shy. You ring in at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Lodge mentioned The Killing, one of the series that he has done directing on. Well, tomorrow, at our regular time period, we will have the composer of the music for that series and the original Dana series it was made from, 40 Vinden. His name is Franz Bach, and you can now hear his music on the brand-new Lifetime miniseries Dr. Forster, which is also playing on Sunday night, also with Episode 2 this coming Sunday. Franz Bach from The Killing and Dr. Forster, live with us tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And our lead guest on next Monday's program will be from the new CW series Containment, executive producers Matt Corman and Chris Ord. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now, Robbie Keough is someone that some people may know from the film Mad Max Fury Road, but what a lot of people may not know is she is also the granddaughter of someone named Elvis.
Yes, she is. Am I commenting on this? Yes, she is the daughter of Elvis Presley, and yes, whenever we do interviews, everyone asks her about her relationship with Elvis. And I can only admire Riley's patience to have to answer that. I can only imagine what it would be like to have to answer that question day after day after day after day your entire life, but I think she handles it with tremendous grace.
How did she come to play the role? Did either of you see her work in Mad Max Fury Road, or did you hear about other things she did, or was it a case of came into your world blind, you thought, okay, that's it, that's her?
No, Amy and I had both seen her in Magic Mike, and Magic Mike, obviously, Stephen had directed, and Stephen asked us to meet with her. He thought that she would be a perfect fit for the role, and we did meet with her, and we're totally blown away. I mean, she's so charismatic and has such magnetism, but also from a technical point of view, she's incredibly controlled and skilled as an actor, so, and incredibly brave, and I don't mean just the sex scenes, which, of course, take a certain steely courage to perform, but I think just the emotional range in her journey, and you see how, almost like a chameleon, how she kind of grows in the role and physically almost transforms. It's really remarkable and impressive, and she's incredibly courageous and a pleasure to work with. She's very down to earth and just really secure in herself and very intelligent. And, you know, I'm so happy for her that she's getting the recognition that she deserves.
How is she courageous? Explain the kind of things you put her through that bring the courage out.
Well, I think, you know, she's carrying an entire TV show on her shoulders. She's literally in 95% of the scenes, if not more. So I think that's asking, just from a workload, that's a tremendous amount to ask of an actor. The emotional range that she has to go through. It's a quiet internal role, but there's still a tremendous amount of emotion that comes through that's expressed primarily through her behavior, not through dialogue. And I think that's why a lot of people are thinking that she's slightly or somewhat opaque. But for me, I think her psychology is relatively clear because I look at what she does. And I think the range of asking someone to start off, you know, entering this world and being courageous enough to enter this world and then seeing where she ends up, which is somewhat in control of it. I think that's a wide range to ask, and it's quite a journey to portray. And then also coupled with the fact, you know, that she has so many characters to interact with, and also coupled with the fact that Amy and I, because we'd written all the scripts up front, we were block shooting, meaning we would shoot out locations from the various episodes at the same time. So Riley would have to come in and be prepared and know multiple episodes, which I think is challenging for an actor to keep their sense of emotional and psychological continuity. But she was really great at that. And, plus coupled with the fact she's in another city, and she's newly married. And I think she really performed in an incredibly professional and brave way.
Mm-hmm. There's a scene that some of the reviewers cited, it may be an episode coming Sunday night or one coming soon, where a client that she's with breaks down, and her reactions go on different switches at the same time. It starts with she's sensitive to what's going on, she consoles, and then she doesn't console, and then she ends up like a psychiatrist saying, okay, time's up, bye.
Right.
All in the same few minutes.
Right. I mean, I think what's really kind of fascinating, and Amy and I had talked to some providers or escorts, real-life escorts before. I think just from an imagination point of view, what Amy and I found really fascinating is entering a world where there's ready-made intimacy, and even with strangers, but being completely in control, she can... You know, one of her clients may end up opening up to her, but how much she really opens up to them is really up to her. So she's really in control of that situation. You know, she gets to call the cards across the table, and she can be as intimate as she wants and sincere as she wants, or she can fake it as much as she wants. And I think, like, everyone does that. That's not a pejorative or a negative comment. I think everyone in society does that. We all show different sides of our personalities to different people, but it's unusual to be in a situation where you control it. And I think that's part of the rush that she gets from the job and really one of the reasons why she's attracted to it.
By the way, in that Entertainment Weekly review, the reviewer also said this about Riley's performance. I'm quoting, "Pay special attention to how she talks about her family, how her birthday or backstory changes, and how she seems energized by the lies." It's another example of this tightrope the character is on, where she can be reflective, but the way she relates to things in her past change or evolve, but there's also this sense of she's also not telling the truth about herself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting. It's really interesting, too, that they put it from the point of view of the escort rather than the point of view of the client. Because, yes, she does change her backstory, and she does lie about her family to different clients. But that's because the clients kind of cross the line. They know it's professional intimacy. They know that an escort has a right to her privacy. And that really is something that you shouldn't really ask that much about. Because no escort is going to want to, you know, reveal their true identity, and certainly not their family's identity to you. So in a lot of ways, each one of her clients is in the state of emotional arrested development. And they're very, like, on different levels, they're somewhat childlike, and they need something from her. And it's almost, you know, they want to be the special one, the chosen one. They want to be the one who she fully reveals herself to. And I think that instead of respecting the boundaries that are there and respecting the fact that she has the right to her own privacy. So it says, it says more about the clients than it really does about her character.
The program is The Girlfriend Experience, and episode 2 is on this Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Stars. And we've got one of the co-creators and executive producers with us right now on Tomorrow We Tell Us. That's Lodge Kerrigan. He's with me live in New York this half hour. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. By the way, coming up later this month on Tomorrow We Tell Us, April 25th to be exact, we will have the stars. We have the co-creators, the stars, and the executive producers of a new series that came out of the New York Television Festival's own production company. It's called The Gems. It is already running on iTunes. It will start later this month on smart TVs and smart TV devices. We will have the co-creators, executive producers, and co-stars of the program out of Chicago, Jim Cosra and Chris Petlak. That's coming up on April 25th, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We had the creators of The Nick on 2 years ago, another of Soderbergh's TV projects. And one thing they remarked about in doing that series, which won the Peabody Award last year, hopefully we'll go into a third season on Cinemax this fall or beyond, is that Soderbergh treated the project as a multi-hour made-for-TV, a multi-hour novel for television, or a multi-hour movie. Was that the guidelines that you and Andy got from Stephen on doing The Girlfriend Experience? And also seeing you're working the... Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I don't mean to interrupt. My bad. Go ahead.
I was also wondering, in addition to the idea of making this a, you know, 13-part movie, although it is half hour and an hour, was the idea also to make it an anthology within an anthology? You know, we think of the anthology as a weekly kind of thing, but in recent years it's become, thanks to True Detective, American Crime Story, American Crime, a yearly anthology. But it looks like you do both. You have the anthology of the series as a whole with this main character that Riley plays, but you also have each week maybe a different client and their story and what they're dealing with and how they enter into this this unusual encounter.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. We treated it as a 6.5-hour movie, but then you have to add another layer or of complexity or another, like, a three-dimensional problem to solve, as it were, that you then have to make sure it works per half hour. See, it has to work on two levels. One, a 6.5-hour level that you could screen in an entirety, or each half hour episodes have to make sense. But we definitely approach it. But I think the only way you can do that is if all the scripts are written up front. I think it's impossible to treat it that way, you know, in the standard model of television while you're shooting, while in the writer's room they're still generating scripts. So I think it's I love it, you know, and we're approaching that for season 2 also, the same approach.
When both of you collaborate that intensely, how do you evolve as a writer, and how did she evolve as a writer and director? How did your modus operandi evolve out of doing this series?
It's a great question. You know, I both Amy and I came from no budget or guerrilla independent filmmaking. That was our roots very, very early on, individually, both of us. And so we were both, like, really fiercely independent and to some degree uncompromising in the visions that we try to create in our own work separately. When we came together, though, I think that we, you know, there were certain challenges. It was kind of, quote unquote, an arranged marriage. That's what Stephen says, given that Amy and I really, although we had worked together on The Killing, it was very short and we didn't know each other that well. And then you're thrown into this incredibly intense collaborative experience of writing and coming up with a unified vision, but then making all the decisions together. But at times it was challenging, but I think both of us have tremendous respect for each other. I think Stephen saw something similar in our work, and or at least in our sensibilities and our understanding of film and film language. And so we came up with a system that if one of us, either of us, really disagreed with something or felt very strongly about it, we'd have the right to veto it. But we didn't really use it all that much. You know, there were a few cases where we did. But I also think that we are both relatively experienced and mature filmmakers. And so as a director for myself, I just want to understand that the scene makes sense and that I know how to direct it. If I actually wrote the scene, I don't have any need to have ownership over the writing of the scene or the creation of the idea. All I have to understand is there a way I can direct it? And I can think of, you know, like in any scene, there are many ways to direct different scenes. So as long as I can understand how to direct it, so I know what I'm going to do on set, I'm totally fine with it. It was intense at times and challenging at times, but it was incredibly rewarding. You know, it's a great, we both realized what a fantastic opportunity this was. You know, in the end of the day, Stephen had final cut, which in essence means that the three of us had final cut, because it's always with Stephen an incredibly supportive decision. He never tells you what to do. He makes suggestions. So for us really to have a TV show where we could write everything and direct everything and have this conversation with Stephen was a tremendous opportunity. And I think we recognized it for that and really kind of looked beyond whatever potential disagreements there may be or challenges there may be and really looked towards trying to solve them so we could really take this project and put it into play, and especially when Riley came aboard.
Yeah. And now that both of you are in this world of scripted TV, which at least from the outside looking in, looks like it is more auteur, it is more creator-driven, it is more distinctive television, whether it's this program or Mr. Robot or comedy or the next Power, et cetera, where do you think we're going to go in the scripted TV world, and how would you like to?
It's all evolving. I just think, you know, I think when you have the director as a major force or a major contributor in the creative process from the very beginning to the very end, it only benefits the project. You get a unity of vision that you do not get on episodic TV. But in order to do that, in order to have one or two directors stay on board for the entire show, it is a necessity that you generate all of the scripts up front. That's really what it comes down to. So it comes down to, are networks and studios willing to greenlight an entire series? Can we move away from this pilot model and really kind of bury it because it's totally inefficient, and really instead embrace, you know, like think outside of the box, but embrace the fact that it's more efficient. It's more efficient time-wise. Amy and I were averaging 9 to 10 hour shoot days on The Girlfriend Experience. You know, on most shows I've been on, it's a 12-hour day. On network shows, it's a 14-hour day. So, you know, I think like when there's big discussions of the crews work too long hours and we have an ethical responsibility to make the working day more manageable and more humane on some level, then I think this kind of feeds into it, and it's a big part.
I'm sorry we have to wrap because we could go a lot longer. It is an amazing discussion, and it's an amazing series. So check it out, The Girlfriend Experience. This Sunday, episode 2, that's April 10th, 8 p.m. Pacific time on Starz. And if you don't want to wait to see the entire series, you can also go to Starz On Demand anytime and check out all 13 and a half hours. Check your local listings for where Starz is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, you can go to Starz.com. That's Starz, S-T-A-R-Z.com. Mark Kerrigan, thank you again for being on the program. Congratulations to you and Amy, Steve, and everybody involved for a great, great start to the series. And hopefully this is the beginning of much, much more, not just for this series, but also for both your exploits in the world of scripted TV.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you for having me on.
You are very welcome, Lodge. All the greatest. Take care.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Bob Kerrigan, co-creator, executive producer of The Girlfriend Experience on Starz, joining us live from New York. Our climate survey question of the week and much more here on Smart Guitar Live. But first, some thoughts from the fine people at Audible.com. I was at a conference yesterday, and I mentioned that our program is sponsored by the folks at Audible.com, an Amazon company. And somebody said, you know what, Simon, that's really fantastic, because I am an Audible subscriber. I love their titles. I love their content. The programming is so great. And it is. So thank you for doing what you're doing. And that's why I love the fact that Audible is part of our program. And the great thing is, wonderful selection of audiobooks, any kind you like, whatever the genre is, you can find it at audible.com. You want to hear the best of Downton Abbey, the best of Harry Potter, the best of Charlie Rose. That's among the 180,000 titles you can choose from anytime right at audible.com. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now through Blog Talk Radio. And the great news is, you can get a free audiobook and a one-month trial of service to see what it's like and hear what it's like for yourself. You just have to set up at this URL. It's audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. And remember, because it's an Amazon.com company, you know the customer service is top of the line. So get that free trial. Get that free audiobook. Head on and make it happen at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. And see why and hear why Audible.com is an amazing place for the best in sound entertainment. When we come back, our classic trivia question of the week. In our last segment, a syndicated trial run that we talked about last fall is becoming a series this fall, and we'll tell you about that too. Plus, we will have Margie Moreno. She is the Vice President of Development Production at NBC Universal. We'll find out about their new weekly scripted drama, El Vato. So special, Telemundo is simulcasting it. We'll get to all that after we pause at the bottom of the hour, actually the top of the hour. I normally say bottom, but it is the top of the hour after that for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet. It's www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Trivial Warfare. If you love pop culture, if you love trivia, if you love competition, you get it all in some on Trivial Warfare. Catch it every week right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best meet your available 24/7 at youtube.com. And you can also hear and watch Blog Talk Radio podcast through the new iTunes app, the iTunes podcast app, available from Apple TV 2.0. Welcome back to Marvin Televised. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, wherever you are across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Special later than normal Thursday edition of the program All About TV. Another great guest coming your way shortly. If you have a question or comment, give us a ring. It's 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Use the phone or the room. Either way, we do hear you. When NBC Universal was Mundo, they tried a weekly scripted drama. It was in English and Spanish, and it ran about a season. Well, now that Mundo has gone into NBC Universal, it's been that way for over a year now, it is now getting back into weekly scripted drama, this time Spanish only, but a very unique one. It's called El Vato. It's about a singer who wants to make it big time in the U.S. of A., specifically in Los Angeles. But here's the catch. The star of the program is a real Mexican singing superstar in real life. His name is El Vato. He's one of the headliners on the regional Mexican music scene. The program premieres this Sunday at 10 p.m., and the first episode is so special that sister network Telemundo will simulcast it. Joining us live from Los Angeles is the Vice President of Production Development at NBC Universal, Margie Moreno. Hi, Margie.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How's the excitement building for Vato's premiere on Sunday night?
We're extremely excited. We've obviously been going full court press in terms of press and marketing and trying to make sure everyone is aware of our upcoming series that premieres on Sunday. And we honestly are counting down the minutes. So we're very excited. Thank you.
What made El Vato the perfect drama for you to get into or get back into scripted television?
El Vato was really the perfect storm for us in that it actually captures many different sides of the U.S. Hispanic experience through one concept, meaning it's a story of a singer aspiring to make it big in the United States and having to come across unexpected hurdles for his shot at stardom. You have an immigrant experience. You have an aspirational story. You have the backdrop of music. And very importantly, you have already the recognition factor of a known Mexican regional singer in our space that has incredible promotional value.
Mm-hmm. You know, of course, that weekly Spanish language drum hours is like the final frontier of the medium. Telenovelas,
yep.
Hot, very big. But it's been a real touch and go to have a weekly Spanish language drama that, A, is produced in the United States, B, can have writers of Latino background who are in the U.S. do it, and third, to have it done in such a way that people know about it. How long had Elvato been in development for, and how did it come your network's way?
It was basically in the works for about a year and a half. Endemol, who is the company behind it, who's very well known in both general market and Hispanic, brought us the concept with Eldasa, the Mexican regional singer already attached, and we came on board at the very early stage in story form to collaborate on the story development and script. So it started out about a year and a half ago, and through that process with Endemol and the producers in Mexico, Boomdog, we determined how to move forward in doing a joint production both in the United States and Mexico. So part of it takes place in the United States, as well as we shot some scenes in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Your sister network, Telemundo, late last year, early this year, ran a telenovela called Celia about the life of the great salsa singer Celia Cruz. Got a lot of acclaim. Became one of the sleeper hits, not just in Spanish language TV, but you could say all of TV last year, in part because of the way the show was produced, a lot of terrific musical background scenes. The woman who played Celia was marvelous, both as a youngster and as superstar. How much did the success of Celia lead to how you tailored Elvato?
A lot. Honestly, Celia sort of paved the way to create the opportunity for us to move forward for Elvato for two reasons. As you previously said, it has been challenging to create a weekly scripted series for targeting the U.S. Hispanic market, and it has also been innovative to create a series that is much more akin to what you would experience in the general market in terms of storyline, production quality, and talent. So we actually took the lead from the Celia series and decided it would be a great idea to do a deep dive in the world of Mexican regional music through a dramatic storyline that was able to explore that world much in the same way that Empire did, but in a way that makes it more relatable for the U.S. Hispanic audience.
I'm sure some people will reference Empire and suggest that this, you know, this is like the great hope that this will become the Spanish language U.S. version of Empire. And one of the critiques of Spanish language television has been, in terms of trying to get weekly hours off the ground, that hey, it's time Latinos have sort of their version of Law and Order, their version of American Crime Story, their equivalent of Chicago Fire, or their version of Fargo, et cetera, et cetera. Like any great show on television right now, a lot of people think that, hey, if everyone got their mindset on it, that we could have the Spanish language equivalent of those shows. Not copycat, but so the equivalent of this is something we can hold up as this is where Spanish language television really can be.
Absolutely. And honestly, that is our hope. That is what we set out to do. And speaking to the quality, we literally brought on board the best team. These are seasoned talent, not just from the United States, but also from Mexico, that have an amazing credit sheet, including having done many series, not just for the U.S. Hispanic market, but for the likes of the international market, for Netflix. So we feel that we hope to bring that level of quality, and more importantly, those themes that resonate with this audience so that it will translate and make it feel like it is something customized for the U.S. Hispanic audience as opposed to, like you said before, a copycat. We want to make this reflective of their world, their values, and their stories that they deal with on day in and day out.
El Vato is NBC Universal's first weekly U.S.-produced Spanish-language drama hour, and it premieres this Sunday night, April 17th at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, and it will also be simulcast on the very well-famous sister network of that service, Telemundo. And we've got live with us here from Los Angeles, Margie Moreno. She is the Vice President of Production and Development at NBC Universal. She's with us this afternoon right here on Tomography Televised. Tom and Apple Band with you live from New York. Happy to have you aboard this Thursday afternoon. 60 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Margie, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, TimeAndApple04 by name. Friday, in our regular time period, we've got the composer of The Killing with us, Franz Bach. He also did the series from which The Killing was inspired by AMC, 40 Vision. He is currently doing the music for the new Lifetime miniseries, Dr. Forster. Part 1 premiered last Sunday, part 2 this Sunday, conclusion next Sunday. Franz Bach from The Killing and Dr. Forster, one of our Meet the Composer episodes. That's coming up tomorrow at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Let's talk about the plot of El Vato. How does it evolve?
The plot starts with basically our singer coming to the United States ready to sign on to a multi-million-dollar contract, yet what he thought he signed up for turns out may or may not happen. So episode one is a huge cliffhanger and honestly sets the stage for the challenges our protagonist will endure for the rest of the series. And more importantly, how his friends, who are really his family here in the United States, his three friends, are what actually help him to ultimately try to get the goal of getting that multi-million dollar contract, and how each one of them plays an integral role in supporting him as a person. And they really are his friends, but more importantly, act as his family members and each play a vital role in his journey throughout the series.
Mm-hmm. And as the journey unfolds, what are the main challenges or the main obstacles to our hero getting success?
Anything and everything, from the challenges that any immigrant would experience coming to the United States, including language issues, including being unfamiliar with rules and regulations and contracts, to honestly being a fish out of water and not knowing anyone in this country and trying to find a support system to get him through the challenges that he's facing. So we have dramatic challenges. We have comedic moments that come out of those dramatic challenges, since obviously in the darkness you have to find some comedy to balance it out. Everything.
Mm-hmm. We just had Lodge Kerrigan from The Girlfriend Experience talking about the fact that he and his partner on the project, Amy Thomas, wrote and directed all the episodes together. Mm-hmm. And they liked the fact that it had an auteur kind of feeling, that it was a distinct point of view, distinct environment, that could happen. In the case of your series, did you have a writer's room? Did Endemol Shine and Boondog bring together U.S. writers, Mexican writers, Latino writers together to make it happen? And give me a sense of the process of formulating the plots, formulating the episodes, the kind of things that the writers and the directors, for that matter, had to deal with.
Absolutely. That was actually a very important part of the process, because to make a series, a scripted series that is relevant to the U.S. Hispanic experience, we felt it was important to have people reflective of the U.S. Hispanic community, including talented writers. So what we did is we brought on board a consultant on the U.S. Hispanic side to give us that knowledge that only a U.S. Hispanic would know in terms of the Mexican regional world. And then we also had a writer's room in Mexico with our company Boondog, who brought in the skill set in terms of filling in the holes. So basically the process was that collectively with the team here in the United States, including ourselves, the network executives, we created the story outlines, the series arc, the character breakdown, and then with the help of the writer's room in Mexico, we fleshed all of that out to go to script stage.
Mm-hmm. talk about Eldasa, who plays the lead role. We were talking last episode about Riley Keough, who really, you know, has the show on her shoulder. And instead of, you know, we have someone who has done acting, who can at least get into the role, here we have Eldasa, who, while a superstar in his craft, is still, you might say, a fish into new water. What was it like for him to adapt to being an actor, to not just being a superstar or potential superstar of his brand of music, but also acting out that, you know, impulse to make it in the United States?
Sure. It's funny that you say that, because when we had our first table read, everybody was sort of nervously looking around to see how Dasa would pull off the read, because that was going to be his first time interpreting the role in the context. And we had already hired an acting coach to be on set, to give him pointers, really to create a support system for him. And after the first day of shooting, actually, no, after the first 10 minutes of shooting, we dismissed the acting coach, because he literally became the character. He became Elvato. And I think the reason that he was able to take on that role entirely the way he did was for a couple reasons. Number one, he understands the world and the character that lives in this world so innately, because he lives it. Although the character is loosely inspired on his life, the character of Elvato actually takes on many different personality traits and directions that aren't necessarily Eldasa, the singer. So he just embraced the role that is Elvato, and then with the help of the other actors on set, really got into it and honestly did an amazing job. Everybody was so incredibly surprised by how well he immersed himself in the character and the direction that he took it, especially for some critical dramatic roles that were pretty intense, that we were very happily surprised how he took that on. At the same time, a lot of that is attributed to Eldasa the person, because he is such a hardworking, opportunistic young man that he really took on this role as an opportunity to learn something. And by doing so, he elicited the help of the actors, of the director. He really took note to their advice, and it shows in his work. And he did a great job. We were very impressed by him.
At what point did Telemundo say, you know what, our sister network, you got something here, let's simulcast this opening episode Sunday night?
Sure. So recently, we have been making a very concerted effort as Telemundo Enterprises, which includes not just Telemundo, the broadcast network, but NBC Universo, the cable net, as well as Telemundo Internacional, to really create a strong Hispanic strategy as part of the NBCU portfolio. And part of that strategy is really leveraging all the platforms to create an event opportunity. So when they saw episode one, meaning Telemundo, they realized that this was an innovative series that honestly hasn't really ever been done before. So to properly support it, we thought doing basically what we're calling a roadblock, where you do the simulcast, that turns this property into a major event that is a must-see experience. So we were very excited when they came to us with that support, but to the quality of the first episode and also to the internal synergy strategy of supporting one another, that opportunity came to be.
Marty Moreno is the Vice President of Development and Production at NBC Universo, and their first weekly scripted drama series produced in the U.S. is premiering this Sunday night at Elvato, with the regional Mexican superstar Eldasa in the lead role. 10 p.m. Pacific time, also simulcast on Telemundo. Marty joins live from L.A. this half hour on Tomorrow Be Told Live. Tom Applebaum from that other coast, something called New York. Happy to have you aboard on this Thursday afternoon. You have a question or comment from Margie, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Monday on the program, we've got the executive producer of the new CW drama Containment, which premieres, I believe, next week, and that's Matt Corman and Chris Ord. Matt Corman, Chris Ord from Containment on the CW. Next Monday, at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now that your network has been around for over a year, Margie, and because you're in the position you are, what kind of interest is there in producing weekly scripted drama for your network? Are you getting feelers from the likes of other independent companies like Endemol Shine, whether it's Sonar, Lionsgate, IM Global, et cetera, et cetera? What is the interest level? Are you getting script proposals? Where are things at in terms of development?
All of the above, meaning, yes, we are definitely interested in hopefully continuing the success of Elevato. Yes, I'm already looking into the future. With that, we hope to launch another scripted series here, and we have had script submissions from all of the companies you just named and are looking to partner up with both companies in the United States as well as abroad to look into possible co-production scenarios for scripted opportunities. So, yes, it's definitely part of our mandate to be innovative. That's part of our brand. And as part of our mandate, we hope to partner up with the best companies to produce innovative scripted series.
Mm-hmm. At NBC Universal, there is a unit called Universal Cable Productions, and they have been very busy lining up talent for various things. They just lined up earlier today the producer of Chicago Fire to do a series, some series for them. And they also are doing a pitch day under Dawn Olmstead, who's their key development person, where they're going to invite people to come in who have never done television and pitch stuff. Has there been any cross development or any sort of crosstalk between you and the people at Universal Cable Productions, UCP, about maybe them developing a show for you?
Yes. Especially within the last year when we decided to get into the scripted world, we did have initial discussions with them about figuring out what opportunities there may be to partner up. What we decided was that it would be important to get our first scripted series produced and premiere it, so that way we basically have a track record in moving forward with any internal potential partners that would be appropriate for the U.S. Hispanic audience. UCP has an amazing track record as both producers as well as recruiting new talent, so we hopefully will be in a position that we could start developing concepts together for NBC Universal.
Mm-hmm. And they've got a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of shows that they're producing for USA, for Sci-Fi, other, and not just NBC Universal Networks, but also other services as well. As I mentioned, they've been on a hot streak in terms of development activity. They've got the pitch day coming up near the end of April. So we'll see whether, in fact, that does happen, where UCP gets into Spanish-language TV production or development in a big way. We will see. As they say, el mundo es el futuro, and it's, the sky is, there is no limit in this world of scripted TV the way it is going. Elvato premieres this Sunday night, April 17th, 10 p.m. Pacific time on NBC Universal and simulcast on Telemundo. Check your local listings for where NBC Universal is available in your area, as well as Telemundo in your area on a broadcast station or maybe cable operator near you. For more details about the program online, here's where we go, www.nbcuniversal.com. And if you want to know where NBC Universal is available in your area, in Espanol, in Spanish, you can also go to this, www.nbcuniversal.com/encuentra, encuentra, I believe it is. That's www.nbcuniversal.encuentra. There we go. We got that right. Margie, thank you so much for coming on. Good luck with Elvato. Hopefully a great, great run in store. One season and beyond, starting Sunday night.
Thank you so much, Simon, and thank you for having us on and the support for Elvato. We really appreciate it.
It is a pleasure for sure, Margie. All the greatest. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Margie Moreno joining us live from Los Angeles. Again, she's NBC Universal's Vice President of Production and Development. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. We first posed the question on Monday. If you know the answer, you can win Nobody Dies in Hollywood, the first novel by the great writer-producer John Wilder of Streets of San Francisco and Return from Molten Dove fame. Very simple question that we want an answer for. Who played Patty Duke's mom on the Patty Duke Show? Who played Patty Duke's mom on the Patty Duke Show? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or use Twitter. Tweet to this hashtag, TWBT. That's Twitter hashtag TWBT. The hashtag is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how at www.hopscotch.com. If you missed the question, we'll post it tomorrow morning one more time on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. And finally, as an update where we come back to some of the guests and topics you had in this program, back last fall, we showcased a trial run in syndication called The Security Brief, all about interesting topics involving security, from home security to terrorism. We had Terry Murphy, the executive producer of the program. It was carried as a syndicated trial run on a number of stations across the country. Well, we're happy to tell you that today, the Security Brief has been announced as a new fall series that will be running on at least 20 stations owned by Sinclair and Gray around the country, with other stations being lined up over the next few months. So once again, The Security Brief, which became a daytime syndicated trial run last fall, will become a series on an ongoing basis this fall, initially on 20 stations owned by Sinclair and Gray. And we will keep you updated on how that situation progresses. Tomorrow on Smarty Televised, we're back at our regular time. Joining me will be the composer of The Killing and the new Lifetime miniseries, Franz Bach. And once again, coming up on Monday, the executive producers of the CW's new series, Containment, Matt Corman and Chris Ford. If you came in on today's program late and you want to catch up on that show or other episodes you missed, go to our homepage anytime, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, anytime you can check out the podcast version, it's available on iTunes.com. And if Apple TV 2.0, check out the iTunes podcast app. We're there, show the Blog Talk Radio podcast. And however you get it, remember, you can download your smartphone, tablet, and take it on the go. Check out my Tomorrow Televised columns at MediaVillage.com and also at YouTube.com, my Tomorrow Televised video segments for the daily series BK Live on BRIC TV here in the New York area. Love hearing from you. What do you think about our guests today? I think we had a fantastic show today. And how do you think about where TV is at and where it's going? Just like Lodge was saying, do you think we're becoming more of a distinctive auteur medium when it comes to scripted television? Do you think there'll be more Spanish language scripted TV weekly hours? Love to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook. And follow me on Twitter. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Amy DeMexico and Candace Williams. Andy Tell is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator chief executive of this very enterprise is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow we tell live is brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information. Get a free trial, 30 days for that, and a free audiobook too. Just go to this URL, set it up, audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, an Amazon company. But tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We're back less than 24 hours from now, 3 days Eastern, New Pacific. Tomorrow, Friday, you know where. Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great out there. Until the next time, farewell and stay tuned.